A short introduction about me. So I'm Weita. I'm a co-developer at Party Technologies, and I work on Ethereum and Ethereum 2.0. In this talk, I'm going to talk about backward compatibility. So in different contexts, we have different definitions for backward compatibility. For example, in the context of system interface, it's mostly about interop with an older version of the interface, and also for things that handle files and objects, it's about handling those things produced by older versions. So we're talking about backward compatibility in a blockchain context. So we are really talking about smart contracts. The definition here I give is, if a smart contract works in the past, then it should continue to work in the future, no matter how many feature upgrades we add. So the thing we talk about here today is that is the not so nice story about backward compatibility in Ethereum. So backward compatibility can be really easy to be broken for a lot of times, unintentionally or intentionally, as we demonstrated on Ethereum. This is a huge issue because real on-chain contracts are affected, and also a lot of real money are involved. For unintentional backward compatibility breakage, we have the example of EIP 1283, which is a change to decrease gas cost. But unfortunately, we found that if we do that, then there are some issues with backward compatibility, because it can cause some contracts to have re-entry attacks. And we also have 884 in Istanbul, which is EIP to increase gas costs. We also figure out this can break backward compatibility because it can just cause some functions of some contract to be frozen. So those unintentional backward compatibility breakage are nearly missed in the whole EIP auditing process. We nearly found it for the last minutes, and it caused a lot of issues. So in the past, we also had debate about whether increasing gas costs or decreasing gas costs would be better. And it turns out both scenarios can break backward compatibility. So it's the same bad thing. And in the future, we may also have intentional backward compatibility breakage. So for example, if now we know that gas costs break everything, so in the future, we might just go ahead with some gas code changes if that's really pressing and we want to reflect the real computation cost. And also the example for state rent, which is, I don't know whether we want to adopt it now, but we probably want to have some similar proposals to fix state bloat, which can also break backward compatibility. And we also have the ETH 1.x to ETH 2.0 shard. In that case, some contracts can be broken as well. So this comes to account versioning. It's really about that we currently don't have really guard for backward compatibility that is so easy to be broken. So we probably want to do something with it. So in this section, I'm going to talk about three different versions of account versioning, from code prefix to special contracts to RLP field. Just give you an idea about how this involves and the thing we finally settled on. So the earliest is probably the code prefix, which was in EIP 154 in 2016. So it is discussed in the context of the EVASM support in Ethereum. So the idea is quite simple. We just add a small code prefix in every contract, and if the contract detects that that prefix, then we just execute using that version instead of the default version. So this is later expanded into EIP 7007. So we did have some issues. So with code prefix along, the issue is that we can deploy data on-chain currently. So some data might just accidentally have the prefix than what is the code on-chain. So This is a huge issue for VM that requires validation. So it's just really bad. And we can do something about this. So there's a way that we can just disallow and use opcode deployment so that we don't have those data on-chain that accidentally have the prefix. But the issue is that it's not backward compatible. So the second variations we had was using account opening were special contracts. So this was EIP 8091 in 2019. So basically the idea is quite simple. We just store the version information of an account in a special contract that is stored in a loan location. And then whenever we execute a contract, we just fetch the version from that special contract first, and then decide which VM we use. So this is quite simple. It does not require any change to state. The issue, however, is that we need an additional tree operation, which is kind of bad because, I mean, each tree operation for all the account is means we double the tree access, and given the current tree access is not really fast, so that's an issue. And finally, we have the account versioning via RFC field. So this was originally in CIP 1014 in 2017. The idea is quite simple, also quite simple. So we have four RFC encoding currently, non-balanced or root code hash. We just add another one version. And we use that to determine the VM we use. So later, this is expanded into 7002. And this is actually quite robust and entirely backward compatible. So this is also strongly favored by the 615 team during the Istanbul discussion. We had less code change than expected, so now guest and party, and I believe another plan. ARETH all have a PR open for this account versioning implementation. It's also slightly good for the storage proposal because now you can use this version field to determine determine what the rest of the RFQ field that storage might add means. So it provides some semantics for them. And it's the current selected account versioning solution. So for completeness, there's also one thing we need to talk about is about if using this version, then what is the version, the child contracts that created by parent contracts. So in EIP 7002, this is what's called a contract family. And later we can, this contract family can be extended. So we can have some extensions to EIP 7002 that allows different account versions to be created. But this is for completeness, so you can read this if you want. And then we have the versionless EVM. So what we are talking about here is really, if we only have account versioning, the issue is every 6 months, we will want to deploy a new version. That for some teams is not substantial. So that is a huge pushback during the Istanbul hard fork discussion. Some people just think account versioning is good, but if we need to maintain too many account versions, then that is a huge maintenance cost, and they may not want to do that. So versionless EVM is a fix to try to address that. So what we do is we design things with forward compatibility in mind, and we remove some offenders that risk backward compatibility in the EVM. So in the end, we just have one new version. So the current EVM version will be the legacy version, and we just have one more version, which is a versionless EVM, and we can add new features, change guest codes on that new version. So talking about general things about interface design, there's something really important, it's called Hurum's law. It basically says that if you have a sufficient number of users, then it really doesn't matter what you promise. In the API, like all the observable behaviors in your system will be used by someone. So for Ethereum, we definitely have sufficient number of users, so Hiram's law definitely applies to us. And I mean, during the backward compatibility discussion, many core developers were talking about the promise of EVM, of Ethereum and EVM. The issue is that there will be someone who that don't follow the promise. Or if something is best practice in the past, it may not be best practice in the future. So what I'm saying here is that instead of doing all the social promising, maybe you can just use some social engineering techniques to fix those issues. So the fix is quite simple. We just remove all those observed behavior that we don't want smart contracts to observe. So the biggest offender is basically gas cost. So we actually, I mean, a lot of core developers has expressed that smart contracts shouldn't make any assumptions about gas cost because gas cost can change a lot. And so we just remove any observer behavior within the EVM about gas cost. In detail, it's basically removing the gas of code. And for call code, delegate call, we just take the full gas. And if any call stack is out of gas, then we just revert all of the call stacks. The third item is because we don't want to accidentally reveal the current gas latch information for unapparent contracts if a child contract succeeds or fails. So we also deny any unused opcodes to be deployed. So this is basically idea adding an extremely simple validation process during contract deployment. So in this case, we can make future upgrades that add additional opcodes much more safer. So there are extra goodies. For example, we can have a hash feature prop, which makes some contract can be pre-deployed on chain that can later take advantage of new feature upgrades. So using a conversion and versionless EVM, we actually have a pretty robust backward compatible solutions for Ethereum. So using this, we now can freely change gas cost because it's now an observable behavior and no contract can depend on it in the versionless EVM version. We can also freely add new opcodes because now we disallow the deployment of unused opcodes. So the conflicts will not be an issue anymore. And for things like state rent, it still removes contracts from the state, but for all the rest of the parts, the state execution, they can be backward compatible. It's not, the upgrade will not be like totally hassle-free. There are some things we need to care about. For example, we need to change the Solidity compiler a little bit so that we can use, because Solidity compiler actually makes some assumptions about gas cost, and we need to make the compiler not make that those assumptions anymore. The second issue is emergency hard fork, which I guess probably nobody can do anything about it. If there is really a denial of service attack on Ethereum, then microcompatibility has to be broken because those attack contracts cannot exist on-chain. And the sixth thing is something extra, is the EVM boundary. So in this section, we're basically talking about what upgrades will break and what will never break has never been really be communicated clearly. So the thing is, no matter how we communicate it, the rule is quite complex currently. Like, we need to make some assumption and not make other assumptions, and the distinction between them is not that obvious. And many smart contract developers and even core developers misunderstood them. So this section is basically an extra proposal that we may want to have a really clear boundary design for backward quality about what we can change in EVM and what we cannot change. So all the contract developer knows that for each contract, we have code, we have the related storage, and also each contract can access extra contracts and pre-compiles. So this is a clear distinction. So what we can do is we just say that the code and the corresponding slot will never change, but we allow change of anything that is in the state, like external contracts or external precompiles. So this basically gives us a boundary, and what we need to do right now is basically build on top of the versionless EVM and then move those opcodes that we might want to change in the future into a precompile. For example, this basically is balance those state access opcodes and some opcodes that requires block information. So we just provide a precompile to access those information. So we can have a better design to communicate the backward compatibility model. And in that case, things like state grant or the migration from ETH 1.x to 2.0 can be much more clearly communicated, and it would cause much less surprise for contract developers. In this talk, this is conclusion. So basically, we are talking about a nearly complete fix for our current backward compatibility model. That consists of a conversioning, which allows smart contracts not to be affected by new versions. And we also have the versionless EVM design, which enables further compatibility. I believe those two combined can provide a really good and robust backward compatibility model for us currently. And there's also a proposal that we, in the future, we might want to do some additional change to also design the EVM for better programming and model communication. So we define a really clear EVM model about what we can change and what we definitely won't change. So it becomes harder to misuse those things. And that's all. If you have any questions, feel free to ask me after the talk. So thank you.